This is Liz Scafidi with UN News. While the COVID-19 pandemic is wreaking havoc around the globe, the remoteness of the Pacific Islands has left people living there vulnerable in many different ways. UN Resident Coordinator Sanaka Samarashina said in an interview with UN News that with borders and airports shut down, protection gear, specialist personnel, and life-saving medical supplies have been unable to reach many areas in need. And the crisis has only been heightened by the devastation inflicted by Category 5 Cyclone Harold, which ripped through Vanuatu. Mr. Samarashina, who oversees UN operations in Fiji, Micronesia, the Solomon Islands, Marshall Islands, Kiribati, Palau, Tonga, Vanuatu, Nauru, and Tuvalu, acknowledged to Julia Dean that difficulties in moving people and cargo has been impinging on the UN's ability to respond to the coronavirus crisis.
Well, I think that, you know, some of the challenges are much the same as everywhere else, in terms of making sure that that people are tested, that people are safe, that social distancing actually sinks in, people follow the policies, making sure that the equipment that's necessary for health workers are in place. You know, these are, of course, the challenges around the world, whether you're talking about New York City or Fiji. But I think particularly challenging here in the Pacific is the remoteness of the locations. It is also concerning that a number of people in the Pacific have different types of underlying health conditions. So if you actually have a massive outbreak, we are very concerned that this could have serious consequences for a significant segment of the population. I think the fact that the borders have been closed in many places and flights have stopped makes the issue of remoteness even more challenging. So we are finding it difficult to move, whether we're talking about personal protection equipment or other types of medical equipment and supplies or specialists and experts that we need in order to respond to this. The movement of people and cargo is very difficult at the moment.
And what else is the UN doing to support the communities and governments of the Pacific?
The UN has really come together at this time, and we have a range of things that we have responded to. We've set up something called Joint Incident Management Team to look at the immediate health sector preparedness and response plans of countries. We receive requests from the countries. As you are aware, I cover 10 countries in the Pacific. These requests come not only from those 10 countries, but from around the Pacific, all of the countries in the Pacific. And then we prioritize, we look at the logistics capabilities in terms of procuring and delivering what is being requested from us. And the requests, you know, are a range of things from testing laboratories, setting up testing laboratories, to masks for health workers, to water and sanitation supplies, etc. At the same time, we are acutely aware that there are multiple needs in multiple sectors, whether we are talking about protecting women and children, when we talk about places where cities have been locked down for weeks at a time, or we are talking about food security right now because people are unable to work and don't have an income, or we are talking about multiple disasters. As you know, we also had a cyclone that has affected a number of countries, and that compounds the crisis that COVID-19 has brought upon the Pacific.
Tropical Cyclone Harold, I think, has battered four countries in as many days. Can you expand on what happens in a situation where you've got a health issue plus a natural disaster happening at the same time?
So on the one hand, you can argue that perhaps we were a little bit better prepared here in the Pacific because we had to deal with a measles outbreak several months ago. And some of these structures and mechanisms are already in place to ensure that we fight the measles outbreak. In fact, the Joint Incident Management Team that I mentioned to you before was something that existed from that outbreak and was repurposed into dealing with COVID-19. Similarly, we have something called the Pacific Humanitarian Team that functions here, brings together all of the UN and other partners like the Red Cross and the NGOs. Now we have government representatives and the regional organizations, the bilaterals like Australia and New Zealand. So those structures were in place, and it really helped in some ways, arguably, to respond as well to TC Harold, which had an impact on four of the countries, all of them in the Pacific, all of which I support: the Solomon Islands, Tonga, Fiji, and Vanuatu. By far, based on our preliminary analysis, certain parts of Vanuatu are the worst hit. followed by a couple of areas in Fiji. Solomon Islands in Tonga, thankfully, were not impacted as significantly as Vanuatu. Sadly, though, 27 people lost their lives in the Solomon Islands as a result of this cyclone. There was a boat that capsized. People were washed off the boat and have one confirmed death in Fiji, a six-year-old child that was confirmed just this morning. We're still waiting for the data from Vanuatu. There are areas of Vanuatu that we don't have any communication with, in Pentecost Island, for instance. And the first teams have been going there yesterday and this morning to make detailed assessments. But clearly, we can see that based on the aerial photography and other reports that some 160,000 people in Vanuatu have been affected by this. Especially badly affected is the island of Santo and Pentecost. Luganville is the second largest city in Vanuatu, and that's on the island of Santo. We know that the infrastructure, people's homes, roofs have blown off. We know that there has been some shortage of water. There's no electricity in many parts. That's the case in Fiji in terms of electricity. And we are very concerned about food security. We think that if we don't get things sorted, we will have people going hungry in a matter of weeks.
The Secretary General launched a reform agenda in 2019. With this double crisis happening in areas of the Pacific, will the reform agenda aid the situation?
I can already see that happening in the past few weeks as we've been working together as one UN system. I think it's an important change to how the UN has maybe functioned in some other places during times of disaster and even in between disasters. So, for instance, if you have all of the sectors coming together, we know that this, for instance, COVID-19 is right now is something that is a health sector response, or largely so, but it's not only. I mean, you cannot possibly move your medical equipment and personnel from one place to another if you don't have your logistics people working. So whilst you have WHO and UNICEF looking at the medical supplies, you have WFP leading the logistics, identifying aircraft and actually getting things from one place to the other. You have other parts of the UN like UNOPS or UNDP who have existing long-term agreements with suppliers in China or North America or elsewhere, whose agreements can be used to procure things that we need. You have like UN Women, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, and others, NGOs as well, looking at the very important issue of protection for children, for women, for people with disabilities, when there are curfews, when there are lockdowns, as I mentioned before. You have very important a role being played by UNHCR and IOM. We know that refugees and migrants are especially vulnerable at this time when borders have closed and they don't have the coping mechanisms that perhaps people who are living in their homes have. So these are just some examples. Food security, as I mentioned before, is a big problem. It's not just a problem in the context of a cyclone, because, you know, there are several countries that depend on tourism in the Pacific, as you know. Some of those countries, Fiji, for instance, Vanuatu, more than 40% of their GDP is based on the tourist industry. And people have no income now. They have no income, and as a result, they have very little access to food. So there are agencies like FAO and WFP, UNDP, looking at making sure that cash transfers, cash grants can take place now, whilst, of course, trying to support the governments in dealing with the economic impacts, the medium-term and long-term economic impacts of this crisis.
Can you see firsthand, are you witnessing the reform saving lives?
Yes, indeed. In fact, I was not so long ago in Liberia, and I was impressed by how the UN, first of all, came together. But importantly, all of the other partners came together as well. There was something called an incident management team. We used to meet three times a week. You had countries like China and the US, the CDC sitting there with the government. It was led by the government. So first of all, you know, these things work well when governments are able to coordinate all of the actors. And what we've tried to do here is wherever governments have needed or wanted our support in terms of coordination, we've done that. We support the governments. The governments are still in the lead, but we support them. I think what I am seeing now in terms of COVID-19 in the Pacific is a repeat of what I saw in Liberia. And sadly, that was not always the case. It was also in some other countries during the tsunami and other cyclones. But I do see that here there is a commitment on the part of all of the agencies to actually come together. And in some sense, you know, having a different role for a resident coordinator has also made that difference, because I think agencies feel that the resident coordinator is a neutral entity. At the same time, is a person that the government knows they can go to without having to go to 17 different agencies during a crisis like this. But it's also important to note that this collaboration between WHO and the resident coordinator is something quite unique. It's happening really for the first time. And it seems to be working not only in the Pacific, but everywhere around the world.
And what is your call to action for those listening both in the Pacific and globally?
I believe that this crisis can only be dealt with if we work together. It is, of course, human nature when there is something like this happening. You know, one tends to think of how one can protect oneself, one's family, perhaps one's community, and by extension, one's country. But at the end of the day, we cannot respond to crisis like this alone, whether we are an individual or family or community or country. We need to help each other. So as much as we need to ensure that the right protocols are in place, that we do our best to keep ourselves and our loved ones safe, we must understand that the only way we can actually beat this is by reaching out and helping each other as well. And we cannot just circle the wagons and hope that this will pass and we will be protected. We have to find ways, safe ways, creative ways, using technology. But if technology is not available, sometimes through physical movement, but safely, to get the expertise, to get the equipment and the supplies to places where it's needed, especially so that the most vulnerable populations are supported and helped during this terrible crisis.